Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Rover Talk. This is our seventh episode, and as usual with me is Dan, Wagon Boy TD on Instagram and Bring a Trailer. Dan, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I can't complain except for the cold. I hate the cold.
It's like I'm freezing.
The winter really sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, today's episode is kind of a cool one because we've decided to go and do a little comparison between the Land Rover Discovery, and the Land Cruiser. Now, I know everybody's going to be like, oh, no. Well, we've decided to choose a specific time frame, which is 1984, which is when the first 70 series Land Cruiser comes to life, and 1993, I would say, 93, 94, which is when they kind of evolve into something else as Land Cruiser and go up the scale in terms of what they're building, the market they're going to. And at the same time, that's kind of the prime era of the Discovery One when it was also. So we think those are the most similar of the two. And the other side of this is that between Dan and I, Dan has driven all Land Cruisers that I've had, which I brought in. And so I think we have a pretty good knowledge of what it is to drive a lot of these cars.
I think so. Yeah.
Aside from the fact that you all know Dan has a Disco One, TDI two door 93. And I currently don't have a Disco. It's not my favorite of the lot, but, I'm sure I will soon. Anyway, so that's kind of what we wanted to get to. But anyway, Dan, what have you been working on aside from like the past 10 minutes that we were there in the garage?
Well, some of you may know, I've been basically replacing everything on the front of the engine, just basically because I needed to replace the alternator. And since I had the alternator off, I looked at the water pump, replaced the water pump, and then, you know.
Now, this is your 1990 Alpine White Range Rover Classic 2.5 TD two-door, which was my first Range Rover, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just for those that haven't tuned in before.
And one of the things was the water pump is actually, you know, fairly simple to replace as it is on most Rovers. But there was a part in there that was kind of fighting me to remove off the old one and put on the new one. And long story short, I had to buy a new part, which was next to impossible to find, but I ended up finding it. Button it all up, and now it's that's fine, but now we feel like we probably might have to replace something within the fuel. So
it doesn't want to start, but I have a feeling there's a cold start fuel advance mechanism that isn't clicking the diesel in, but I'm sure we'll figure that out. So this week, Dan, obviously you know, because I've been sending you pictures.
Yes.
I took out the engine of my 1992 two-door VM 2.5 Range Rover.
That's because you're doing a... Mm-hmm. Okay.
Shh. I'm doing something, I don't want to tell
okay,
yet.
Okay, surprise. All right.
The podcast listeners will be the first to know once I'm ready to tell
what
awesome.
It is.
In any case, just to let you know, we took out everything in the engine bay except for the brake booster, the brake parts, the air conditioning evaporator, the condenser went out. And we left also, what else did we leave? Nothing, really. Took out all the radiators, everything. The engine came out. It's definitely, if you have an engine hoist, it's definitely a garage do-it-yourself job. You just have to have a little bit of patience and label everything correctly like you would with any other engine. The top bolts of the transmission to the engine block are a little bit hard to get, but if you have some angled spanners, you can get to those pretty easy. A couple of crowbars always help to pull the engine and the transmission apart. And the cool thing actually is that from the LT77 gearbox to the VM engine, there's an adapter plate because the fit isn't exactly perfect. And that adapter plate actually is pretty handy because it has the measurements of the transmission. So if you're going to put a different engine and you have that transmission, that adapter plate, you can take it to any place and get it machined and get a proper adapter plate for whatever engine you're putting in, which is super handy, by the way. So if you're thinking of doing an engine swap and you want to not take out the transmission and leave it in place, but you need to make sure that one fits into the other, you can take that adapter plate off of the engine and use it as a template for to get your own adapter plate either built or, you know, whatever. So that's actually a pretty cool thing about it. I discovered that I was very happy because that turbo diesel engine is not going back into that car.
No.
Anyway, that's what I've been up to this week. I also have a couple of Range Rovers coming. A 3.9 four-door manual gearbox and a 3.5 four-door manual gearbox. They'll be here next week. So if you're interested in those, are going to go up for sale likely on Bring a Trailer. But I mean, if these are these strike your fancy, please reach out to us at rovertalk55@gmail.com. A few of you have reached out. Thank you so much. We appreciate your stories. We're going to get to an episode where we have some comments on everybody's stories. So don't feel that we don't listen to you or read you. We always do. And reach out to us at our Instagram, which is Rover Talk. And Wagon Boy TD is Dan's Instagram, and mine is SRI2405. And I don't know why that's so complicated, but it just is. Anyway, so that's what we've been doing. That's what we've been working on lately. Dan, have you been working on anything else? Or is that kind of the extent of it?
No, that's it. I've just been really happy that I've been driving my disco. Normally the kid goes to sleep at the end of October, but we've been, you know, fairly fortunate that we had probably one of the warmest Novembers, and the kid's been out. I drove him today because it's hashtag TDI Tuesday.
It is.
But yeah, he's great. And
all right, well, let's start off. We wanted to do our comparison today, and we wanted to talk a little bit about Land Rover and Toyota Land Cruiser. And we chose the Disco, and in detail, we wanted to choose the LJ70. And I'm going to extend a little bit to the BJ73 as well, which are Land Cruiser models, because they're kind of like, you know, nowadays, people that are not, you know, 1,000% Land Rover guys or 1,000% Land Cruiser guys, they're kind of in the middle. They might want to know a little bit more about what's living with each other, and I think we've both have the enough experience to talk about these with, you know, with proper knowledge and stuff like that.
Well, absolutely, because it's the same genre, you know. They're both great designs, both 4x4, you know.
And they're both really cool, let's be honest.
Exactly. All right.
So I wanted to start off with the history of Land Cruiser. So we've been through the history of Land Rover, and there's a similarity here, which is that Land Rover was started by the Wilkes brothers, and they picked up an American Jeep, and they based the design of the Land Rover on that, on the first, you know, series Rovers back in the, you know, 40s. But in case you didn't know, and a lot of you probably do, in 1941, the Japanese army decides to invade the Philippines, and what they find is a Mark II, or a Bantam Mark II Jeep that the Americans have left behind. They send that to Toyota, and that's basically the model of the Jeep that they make until about 1945, and then it's left kind of untouched, silent, and probably because of the repercussions of the war, until 1951. And in 1951, the Land Cruiser is born. And why is it called Land Cruiser? It was kind of a jab at Land Rover. So we know that. So the funny part is that the origins of both of these cars, or both of these companies, comes from the American Jeep, which, in my opinion, and I'm just being honest here, is the worst of the lot. I would have a Land Cruiser or a Land Rover ahead of an American Jeep any day.
Those are kind of fighting words.
I know they are, but I have to give my honest opinion. And yes, I have had a Jeep, and I've driven a lot of modern Jeeps. And my dear friend Steve, who is no longer with us, unfortunately, bought two of them. And I tried to dissuade him both times, and he bought them anyways. And they never did convince me. But anyways, so anyway, basically Toyota makes what is different series of cars up until about 1984, where they graduate from the 40 series, which was your traditional metal-looking Land Cruiser, which by the way, I think are pretty cool. I almost bought a pickup model a couple months ago in Spain, but somebody picked it up before I could lowball the guy. Anyway, you know. So the 70 series succeeded the 40 series Land Cruisers, and of course, not to leave this out, the Toyota market is very global. And while Land Rover has, or at the time had, three models, which was the Disco from 1989, the series models, the Defender, and the Range Rover, well, by the time 1989 came around, it was the 90 into the Defender, the Disco, and the Range Rover. Toyota had a bunch of different variations for all of their Land Cruisers. Now, and trust me, I've tried to look this up, and I just wanted to get very quickly into the naming conventions. So they're known as the FJ. F is for gas engines. B is for diesel. So when you see, for example, a BJ model or an FJ model, it's going to be gas versus diesel. Now, there's lots of other letters in there. So the H is for six-cylinder diesel. And then the F has the 2F. I don't know. The naming convention is very strange, and depending on where you wanted to buy a Land Cruiser, it might have looked slightly different or had slightly different body variations anyway. To make a long story short, the BJ and the FJ and the LJ, the LJ and the BJ are diesel. The FJ is gas. 70 is the series. The 70 model is the short wheelbase. 73 and 74 are medium wheelbase, and 75 is long wheelbase. More or less, okay? So this may have, and I know the Toyota guys are going to kill me on this one, but it is what it is. I mean that's
more of a breakdown than I ever knew before. That just simplified it.
And here's the thing. There's like 75 different sources where you can check this, and I'm not still 100% sure if I know exactly how they are. Anyway, so I know I'm going kind of long-winded in this, but I wanted to stop and thank Ben Fogle. His book, The Story of the Land Rover, the Car That Conquered the World. I don't know if I said that title right. I might have said it right or wrong. Anyway, fantastic book.
Yeah, it's a great read.
Tons of information about Land Rover. And I actually picked up a lot of the Land Cruiser origins beginnings from there too. So credit to him and his research. And I know he's worked on that. He worked on that book for a long time. We're going to reach out to him, see if he wants to chime in one of these episodes, probably for season two. Hopefully he'll be kind enough to give us a little bit of his knowledge in person, or at least over the phone.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Dan, let's get into this. So here's the thing. You know, I'm going to focus on two models at the same time of the Land Cruiser. Dan will talk a little bit more about the Disco, obviously, but basically, I wanted to focus first of all on the LJ70, which is short wheelbase, 2LT turbo diesel engine, and then the BJ73. Now, the BJ73 has two variations, which is really strange for Toyota. One same name for two variations. The most known one is the 3.4 naturally aspirated non-turbo diesel engine, which was the one that they had in the most part of the world. But Spain, Portugal, southern France, and Italy were able to get the 2.5 liter turbo diesel VM, which is the same that's run in, you know, Land Rover, Range Rovers, and a variety of different cars. And those were actually assembled in Portugal. By a company by the name of Salvador Caetano. And they're exactly the same. They just carry a different engine. But it was smaller, and it was for tax purposes. That engine was used in those countries because it got better mileage and it was cheaper to register and run. So that's kind of what we've always said about a lot of the reason why that. So the BJ73 could have one of two engine variations, which is very rare on Toyotas. For the most part, they change the name if they're going to change the engine in it.
Right.
You know, the Japanese. But anyway, so Dan, let's go into the Disco. Give me the specs, and then we'll compare.
Okay, so the wheelbase is 100 inches. So it's kind of like when you're looking at, like, a series is 88. Disco is 100. It's about 100 and almost, it's almost 10 feet long. It's like 117, 18 inches. It's you know, fairly long. In the 200, let's talk about like the 200 for a sec. It has only about 100.
We're talking here about the two-door.
The two-door.
Two-door, okay.
I mean, it's essentially the same as far as like the spec. You're just getting, you know, two doors. But if you're using like the 200 TDI, we've talked about this before, you know, it's not, you know, banging horsepower. It's only like 111, I think, for the 200 and like 114 for the 300. So power-wise, it's essentially the same. So in comparison, let's kind of just do like a comparison. So for example,
if you compare that the engine to the 2LT, which is in the LJ70.
Which would also have a turbo in it.
Which also has a turbo in it. It's a 2.0 instead of a 2.5 like the 200 okay. TDI. It's going to give you about 100 and I think it's 110 horsepower.
So it's about the same.
So it's about the same. I'd say that it's a slightly peppier and a little bit higher compression than the 200 TDI, but just a little bit okay. of compression. But the difference, too, is that the disco weighs a lot more than the LJ70. There's a weight difference. So the power-to-weight ratio in a two-door disco is going to be a little bit less than it is in an LJ70. The BJ73, which is also comparable, has a 2.5 VM, which runs about 120 horsepower as well. And it's going to be the same situation. So that engine is a lot higher compression. It's going to have a little bit less low-end vibration, a little less torque, but a little higher in horsepower than the 200 TDI.
Okay. And then how is the we all know how the 77 transmission is. How would you compare the transmission in the Toyota versus like the disco? Because in the 77, you know, you have a slight lag between second and third, and then once you get, you know, up, it's a little bit peppier. You just said that it was a little bit peppier. So, like, in comparison, for people that actually haven't driven a Toyota but have driven a disco,
so,
TDI.
So here's the thing. The LJ70 and the BJ73 have the Toyota, and I can't remember the letters, but it ends in 95 transmission. And that transmission is bulletproof.
Okay.
It's bulletproof. I mean, I've driven cars that have 180,000 miles, and the shift on that transmission original is rock solid.
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing too. Due to the shifting position, the design of the interior, it's a lot more comfortable to shift a disco than it is to shift, because it's kind of like a long stem gear lever, and so you really have to find the spot. But once you find it in, there's literally...
You're talking about the Toyota.
Yeah, the Toyota Land Cruiser.
Oh, okay.
Land Cruiser has no slop. I mean, those transmissions are... You can do anything to them. I've never driven one of those...
Just because of the positioning of
The gear ratios are not the same. So here's the thing. The first gear ratio on the Toyota transmissions, on the Land Cruiser transmissions for the 70 and the 73, the first gear is extremely short. So it's basically a granny gear. In the disco, you can actually use first gear a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yet the R380 or what's the name of the transmission? I can't remember.
R380.
The R380 is actually...
Which is kind of what everybody... At least in the last 5 to 8 years, everybody's kind of like taking the Ashcroft R380s and bolting them onto the 200s because of the fact of, you know, the gearing is a lot better.
The gearing is ideal because it's good at lower speeds and you can still, you know, kind of cruise in first gear a little bit. Mm-hmm. And fifth gear is actually pretty ample so that it's comfortable for highway speeds. The Toyota transmission is all the gears are a little bit shorter. First gear is basically a granny gear.
Yeah.
So you're using second gear instead of first. And
which essentially you can kind of do in the 200 if, you know, when you're downshifting or starting out, sometimes it's almost better to, you know, start out in second, but the first is a longer gear.
It's a longer gear ratio than the Toyota transmission. Yeah. So in that regard, while The Toyota transmission is bulletproof, and if you encounter one of those transmissions that's broken, somebody has never used the clutch on it, because those things are rock hard. They're perfect. They're crisp even with high mileage, but the way that they're geared is for first to be a climbing or a granny gear,
yep.
And they're not really that well equipped for very high speed, so... You know, when you're above like 75, you're at about 3,500 RPM or 30. So it's kind of high for a diesel engine.
Well, you're probably at 4 if between the 35 and 4.
Even more.
Yeah.
So it's less comfortable for highway travel, but But it's but I mean, it's not uncomfortable at all. It's not. Yeah. It's I've taken all the Land Cruisers I've had on the highway. But then if you think about it, that also has to do with the differential. And remember that even like the FJ 60 and 62 that you got in the United States struggled above 65 miles an hour. They're not geared to be highway cars. They're geared to be shorter, even the automatic transmissions. Yeah. So that's why a lot of people would swap them out and put in a five speed and instead of the four. But anyway, the LJ 70 and BJ 73 transmissions are five speed. So they are.
What you're telling me right now, the score is two for Toyota and one for Land Rover? Because you're making some pretty good points there for Toyota, which is
a little,
you know, why we're having this discussion.
It is. I'd have to – well, you know what? I'd give the 2LT seems to be a little bit peppier of an engine, as is the VM. Mm-hmm. So I'd give that one to Toyota. And the transmissions are really, really – good. The Toyota one's high quality and durability, but it's more comfortable to drive a disco.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of shifting.
I can shift with my pinky and I can steer with my pinky. Like it's.
So, I mean, it depends. Like, again, I always go to the same thing. It depends on what use you're going to give it, right?
Exactly.
I mean, if you're going to climb up steep mountains, you're probably a little bit more comfortable in the Toyota. If you're going to do an all around use, you're probably more comfortable in the disco.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be doing a lot of highway, you're more comfortable in the disco.
Oh,
for sure.
100%.
So
yeah.
I'd say like a 1.5 each way.
Okay. All right. So split so far.
Anyway, let's get a little bit into the body. So the LJ70 is a short wheel base, so it doesn't have a lot of cargo capacity. So it's probably my estimation.
And it's still only technically a two-seater, or are there two facing in the rear?
No, it's a okay, so the LJ70 is a five-seater with regular three in the back, two in the front.
Oh, okay.
The BJ73 comes in two configurations. One is very rare, which has bench seats, facing bench seats in the back that take up all of the cargo area. So you don't have like a separate trunk. And those are rated to seat eight people. So it would be three and three facing each other, which has to be very small people.
Yeah.
And two in the front.
Okay.
The other configuration is your regular bench seat in the back, and so three in the back and two in the front. Now, even though the BJ73 and the LJ73 can both have that configuration, their cargo area is substantially smaller than the Disco.
Well, I mean, I can tell you right now, with 50 cubic square feet in the back, I can fit almost a washer and a dryer in the back of a Disco, especially with the two door, because the sides are a little bit more tucked in, and as you know, the seat folds. It, you know, does the triple fold where
the Toyota seats do the same thing. They do the triple fold.
So as far as like floor to ceiling, you know, side to side, obviously. The Disco, like if you're a hauler like myself, I'm usually the only person ever in my vehicles. It's the best for hauling. Like I can literally fit almost a washer and dryer. Whereas I know for a fact in a Toyota, you're lucky to get your burner in there. Get your dog in there.
Yeah, there is a lot more room in the Disco. Now we have to remember that the BJ73 is a removable hardtop model. So the reason I wanted to focus more of the comparison on the LJ70 is because it's a hardtop, just as the Disco is. The BJ73, as well as the LJ73, which has a bigger engine, has the 3.4 liter, they are both removable hardtop like a Jeep would be.
Right.
And they have roll bars and everything, so they're prepared. They're actually really cool looking when they have the hard top off, and you can buy a canvas top. But I don't want to digress from that. Anyway, the Disco has a lot more space than the LJ for sure.
Right.
So, you know, there's different things. I mean, they are different cars per se, and it kind of depends on what you're going to use them for. But here's the other thing that I really like to focus on, and I'm going to try to explain. We were talking about this right before we started recording. So there's a clear difference in build quality.
Well, yeah.
And
that kind of goes to your initial comment about, you know, you use the word bulletproof. But I know you want to talk about the interiors because you could tap your finger on a Land Rover dash and all of a sudden you have a crack in it.
But here's the thing. I'm going to try to see if I can properly explain this. I know you understood me. Land Cruisers of the time have better build quality, but the Disco is a hell of a lot more comfortable car. And I'm going to try to explain this. So, for example, when you take apart a Toyota, everything, all the bolts are the same size of the different areas. Everything fits perfectly into where it's supposed to fit. There's very little tolerance in any bolt holes, anything like that that you do. It all comes off almost in a modular way. And you can tell that things have been like precisely engineered to fit in their spot, right? But here's the thing. There's an air of quality, or I wouldn't say quality, I'd say comfort that goes to a Land Rover Discovery that you don't have in a Toyota. And it's just the materials inside have a little bit more padding. There's a little bit more insulation. There's a little bit more, you're a little bit more distant from the noise of the engine.
Oh, yeah.
The suspension, I'd say, and the chassis are much more forgiving on the Disco than they are on the Land Cruiser. And I think that their off-road capabilities are very similar. So I wouldn't put one in front of the other there. Anyway, I'm trying to explain this because it's a weird concept to think that you're much more comfortable in a car that has less build quality. But that's the way it is, having driven.
I think that kind of sums it up. You know, and I think that's pretty much expected by, you know, all of us that have lived with, you know, Land Rover, you know, quality. We just kind of come to accept it.
Yeah, you come to know what it is for sure. So that's kind of where I wanted to get to with this is that it's kind of hard to explain if you're going into this level of detail of things, but I would definitely say that I'd rather be in a Land Rover versus a Land Cruiser. But when I have to work on a Land Rover, I know it's going to be a hell of a lot more frustrating than when I have to work on a Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
Because everything is going to fit together as it should, you know?
Right.
And it's going to be a lot easier. And then when I take something out, then all of a sudden there's a metric bolt, and then there's a standard bolt, and then there's, you know, four different bolts. And it's not like somebody's been in there before. You can tell it from the factory. There's like, they were like, oh,
100%.
I don't have a 12. We'll stick in there a half and half inch, and that'll be fine. That'll do. That'll do. So, anyway.
I think it actually, you know, we've said this before. It really just comes down to what design you're mostly attracted to.
Okay, good. That's a great thing that you bring up.
You know, because I'm all about design first, whereas I think a lot of, you know, people go into it like, what can it do for me? Whereas I'm about design first, and then what can it do for me? Because I'm the one who's driving the vehicle every day. I'm the one that approaches the vehicle. I kind of look at my cars as, you know, this car has to do something for me. Like when I was looking at Bring a Trailer today, and rarely will a vehicle give me butterflies. Kind of like when, you know, you see a love or something, you know.
Yeah.
Rarely will a vehicle give me butterflies. And so I kind of look at that as what sort of emotion will that car do for me first. And I think, you know, people are in that same boat in regards to, you know, what's their attraction, you know, to a vehicle.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I have to, cars that I absolutely love, it's the thing that I get out of it, and then I look at it and I'm admiring the lines. Like, currently, I shouldn't say this, but I'm daily driving an E92 BMW, a coupe.
That's, you know, the one another that podcast.
And honestly, I'm going to sell it and I'm going to buy something else just because I have the ants in my pants with selling cars and buying new ones for daily driving. But I look at it and I love the lines. But for example, the other day I saw, like I just told you, a 1934 or 35 Auburn Boattail Speedster. And I think it's in the Chicago collection. I've been to see it three times in like a month because I'm obsessed with the lines of it. So I understand the design and different car. And it doesn't mean you have to like a certain type of cars. It's just different cars call you for a different reason. And it's funny because if you look at the lines of the Land Cruiser, they are much more angular. It's much more square set drafted lines than the Disco. The Disco is a little bit softer. It's a little bit rounder. It's a little bit, you know, and especially the two-door, which I think looks far better than the four-door. But I think the four-door was kind of like a screw-up in the same way that I think it's the four-door Range Rover is a little bit more proportioned than the four-door Disco. The four-door Disco is just not my taste. But anyway, but the lines of the Disco, and yet you think about it and, you know, the design, there's only 5 years difference from the first Disco to the first 70 series, and they're completely different.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know.
It's funny. And then the interiors, even the lines, like the lines of the interiors are the same. It's just they're the lines inside of the Land Cruiser are very angular. It's very square, rectangular, very set, you know. And then the Disco is soft.
Yeah, the Land Cruiser design is just very, very, it's very sharp.
More utilitarian.
Yeah, because even the series had softer corners, you know, not so much maybe like the lightweight, but, you know.
The front did.
It was still a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Softer, you know, because it still had like a curved, you know,
so,
wings.
Yeah. So here's the other thing the other side of this that I want to talk to is the actual ride. So what does it feel like to drive one? I'm going to let you start off with this, Dan. I know you've had less time in a Land Cruiser, but you've driven all the ones that I've brought over, right? Or well, the vast majority of them.
Yeah. I think the Land Cruiser that I think I remember that I loved, and I think
was the first BJ73.
Yeah, it was the first BJ73, and I was actually quite surprised on how modern.
Let me introduce a slight issue here. The BJ73 does run on leaf springs versus the regular coil suspension that's on the LJ70. It's changes. I don't want to do a full on comparison because the Disco does have the, you know, regular coil suspension.
I did love that, but you know, as many know, I daily drive the Disco. I haven't done anything, you know, upgrading, you know, to the suspension. It's the same as it was, and I'll probably, you know, retain it. It's not quite like a Range Rover Classic, because we all know that in the Classic you do like this magic kind of float.
You feel great in
you
it.
You just feel great. It's just different, you know. You're in a greenhouse, like you sit higher, like everything about it is, you know, pretty magical. And then the Disco, it just is. I would just compare it to like a modern, you know, not super modern, but you know, it's a nice, clean, soft ride. And you know, I run, you know, my tires are a little bit aggressive,
chunkier,
a little bit chunkier, but they're still the you know, 70/16s are not like, you know, massive.
So
I mean, it's a great ride.
So I'm going to do a three-way comparison here, and I'm going to take the more systematic approach. So the Disco has a little bit better of a driving position, and the reason I say this is because you're just a little bit higher up and a little bit more relaxed in terms of your back. You're not very, very upright. The LJ70, you're very upright, and the BJ73, you are very upright. So it's almost like sitting at your dining room chair moving the way the pedals and the shifter are.
So would you kind of compare it to like if you were, maybe it's a little bit of an upgrade from a series?
Yes, it is. Okay. I would definitely say that. Okay. I would definitely say that it's a little bit of an upgrade from the series. It's not uncomfortable. Right. It's just the different seating position. In terms of your regular driving it around, I'd say that, you know, shifting a Disco is a lot easier than shifting a Land Cruiser, because the Land Cruiser, both the BJ and the LJ, have a long stem gear, a long stem gear lever. So, you know, your throws are longer, your shifts are a little bit longer, and it's you
again,
have to get,
you could compare that to a series.
Almost. You could compare it almost to a series too, to a series as, not to a series as well. Right, sorry,
right. Yeah,
and so it's a little bit more of an effort to drive both the BJ and the LJ. The BJ is especially a little bit bumpier just because it does run on leaf springs, but I wouldn't see the LJ as that much softer either. So, the chassis are both very, very hard, as it, you would expect for, like, you know, a work vehicle or an off-road vehicle.
So would you recommend that, say you're just getting into this market, is that vehicle, is that a second or a third vehicle, or is it someone who's a newbie who thinks, you know, this is the only cool classic I can afford that I want a daily drive in the summer? Are they going to get exhausted after the first month?
No, they're not going to get exhausted. It takes a little bit getting used to, but it's nothing like driving a series where you don't have power steering and
right.
You know your brakes are so and you have to play with momentum to get up to speed. No. Both the LJ and the BJ, as well as the Disco, are perfect daily drivable cars.
The Disco, for sure. I know. I just wasn't sure if, like...
Yes. No, I would daily drive both of them. In fact, there's been certain times... That, like, remember, I think it was last winter that I didn't have a daily driver for a little while.
You were using one.
And I was using a BJ73, and it was actually quite comfortable. I was able to do everything I do in a regular car.
Yeah.
It's just, if I compare it with the Disco... And I think the RRC is at a different level of comfort. But if I compare it with the Disco, if you told me out of pure comfort, which one would you rather be in? I'd rather be in the Disco than in the Land Cruiser. But the Land Cruiser is a very cool car. The other thing would be, too, it depends on the time of the year. Because right. if it's summer, the BJ has...
Let me ask you this, okay. Then, since we're talking about comfort. Do most of those Toyotas come standard with AC, because, you know, everybody on this planet for some reason needs AC. Mm-hmm. So if you had to add it, or if it does it come with it, like, I'm sure a lot of listeners are like, I have to have AC. What's the situation there?
The situation is that I would say that about 75% of LJ and BJ73s do not come with factory AC.
Okay. If it did, then it's kind of a hidden gem. Is that like...
Yeah, it is. And it's very easy to see. In the controls where you control the airflow right in front, like in every single car...
Is it a snowflake? It's
a button with a snowflake. Okay. If it doesn't have the button with the snowflake, it didn't come with AC. Doesn't mean you can't add it after.
Right.
I think it's about $3,500 to add it after.
Because they make kits for those?
You just have to have a crafty mechanic, because the parts are there. The hardest part about it is actually finding a bracket or having a bracket made for the compressor.
Oh, okay.
And you have to change out the pulley so that you can with the pull. You have to find a pulley for the AC cars. But I have a feeling that the BJ models all come with the same pulley, and it's just some have a belt connected to it and some don't.
Oh, okay.
I can't confirm this 100%, but that's kind of my deep recollection of this. A lot of them didn't come with AC, and when they do have AC, it doesn't work like the AC in a Disco, which is fabulous.
Freezing.
Fabulous.
I mentioned it today about adding a 200, because there was a 200 up for auction. And, you know, the first question everybody is, so it's like, does it have AC and can you add it? Yes, you can add it. They do make kits for the 200, 300. My friend Chris just put AC in his 300.
But that's a Defender, right?
His is a Defender. Yeah. And my AC is ridiculously freezing, and the heat is ridiculously warm.
Yeah, those systems do work really well.
Amazingly well.
The heat works well on the Land Cruisers. The AC, not as good.
Okay.
But you know, it's just kind of what the cars are. So in terms of ride quality, that's where I, driving one versus driving another, that's where I would stand. There is a thing that kind of changes everything, which is if it's the summer and you have a BJ 73, which you can take the removable hardtop off, and it's a fantastic. Plus, you can take all the windows out too, so it's actually right. it ends up kind of looking like a series.
Some of them do they the windshield fold on forward?
Yes, on all of them they do.
Oh, okay.
In fact, you'll see on the BJ 73s, there's two lumps of plastic on the on the front hood, and that's so you can lean that back.
Yep.
And taking the top off is probably the first time you do it, a two-hour job for two people. The second time you do it, it's 45 minutes. And also you need a second person just to help you unless you have like a lift mechanism for the top to be suspended above, you know, your inside of your garage or whatever, you need a pulley system of some sort.
And you probably don't get frustrated if you can't separate it because I'm sure in some markets they've sealed the top.
If they've sealed the top, you need to you need to go back to the cellar and slap them in the face with a sweaty gym sock. Anyway, they come apart pretty easy too. But yeah, that I mean I'd have to say that I'd rather be in a disco for driving daily. But Land Cruisers are kind of cool. I mean, it's also the LJ also has this thing about the fact that it's really short. So it's a shorty. It's very maneuverable. You run in and out of traffic very easily. The 2LT engine is also very durable and very easy to maintain, as are all the other engines.
I will say on the what I do like about those are the rear doors. Because isn't like one like a baby door?
Yeah, there's like a 70-30 or 60-40 door split.
Yeah, so I do like that.
Yeah, the disco door was always kind of uncomfortable because it's so damn big.
Oh, my God. It weighs like 500 pounds. And, of course, you know, mine being import, it doesn't open. It opens from left to right. So, like, the massive door blocks
Does that open different for the UK market ones? So, do they open differently?
I don't know if they... I don't think they do.
I think they all open left to right.
Yes, but I'm just saying, like, it's not really, like, the most convenient if you're, like, unloading the dog onto the...
Oh, yeah, especially if you parked on the right side of the street. Exactly. You're, the dog's going out to the middle of the street, so you got to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
No, that is a good
detail.
I do like
the doors on the Toyotas. Kind of reminds me of an Astro van. Like the way their doors open.
Yeah, it is. It is. But I think the Range Rover tailgate is the best way to open the rear door. But anyway, that is an interesting detail. So let's talk a little bit about what each of these are worth.
Right. I was going to say, like, what can someone expect to pay?
So here's the thing. Dana and I were having this discussion before we started recording. And you were saying, Dan, that you think there's a lot less...
Well, I was saying that I bet you I could find more Toyotas for sale than I could.
And we're talking about in the U.S., right?
In the U.S. Okay. Than finding, you know, a disco, two-door, TDI, left-hand drive, you know.
And I was kind of saying that wasn't really true. And then Dan started giving me some arguments and he convinced me. So I think you're right. I haven't seen a lot of two doors, and in fact, I've brought in three two door discos. One was sold on Bring a Trailer to a wonderful gentleman that took it up to New York. The first one I bought was yours. Remember when we found yours, which was especially a good one because
it came with like 10 years of service records,
and every auxiliary component had been swapped out, so you had new everything.
My engine bay is brand new.
Everything in there. That was the reason. We found that one in Toledo, which has a Toledo place. He's lived in Toledo its entire life. And the third one.
Toledo, Spain.
Toledo, Spain. Yeah, not Ohio. And the third one went to another gentleman that was in, which was a 300 white. I found that one in Valencia. And that one went to DC area.
Yep.
So, I mean, and the other one that appeared on Bring a Trailer was an automatic. TD, was it 200 or 300? I can't remember.
I think it was a 300.
300?
Yeah.
So right hand, but it was right hand drive. Yeah. It was red. It looked great. I really like the look of it, but I've never driven an automatic turbo diesel disco. It must be like really slow, like bad, right?
I
don't know. Anyway, let's not put it down. Anyway, where do you think the value is?
So I would, you know, it's... You're asking the wrong person because you know, for me, it's priceless. But I think you would know better if you had to go find one in Spain and bring it in, and let's say it had under 100,000 miles, which with these discos is next to impossible to find, because a lot of the markets where these were, either the owners rode them until they like died, collapsed, and then they buried them, or they just don't exist.
Or they did the same thing but just cared for them a lot.
Well, exactly.
So, I mean, it's very hard to find a low mileage disco. I would say that the market value here in the U.S. for one that's properly imported with its paperwork, a U.S. title, let me put it to under 150,000 miles.
Yeah.
I would say that it's probably in the neighborhood of, at the very low, depending on a little bit worse condition, about 13.
I was going to say in that 13 to 16 range.
13 to 16, I think, where the spot is. And this is, again, a two-door.
Yes.
Two-door TDI, either 200, 300 TDI with a manual, which is the rare bird. I'd say the market's right about there. In terms of the LJ and the BJ, so the Land Cruisers. So the LJs actually have a little bit of a higher value. And I think it's because of the fact that not everybody appreciates a removable hardtop vehicle. And I think the 2LT engine has a great reputation, which I think it perfectly lives up to.
Going back to earlier on in class, that is still a diesel?
That's still a diesel.
Okay.
It's turbo diesel, manual. I sold one to a wonderful gentleman through Ring of Trailer that went down to Louisiana. And in fact, he drove it from Louisiana all the way there, from Chicago to Louisiana.
Awesome.
He had a radiator hose blew out. He stopped at O'Reilly's parking lot, changed it in the parking lot, kept going.
Yeah.
Very happy. That was a really cool car. It was on a little bit bigger tires. That one sold for $19. And the other LJ that I sold a while back sold for, I think it was $18. So I think the value of the LJ in good condition, and again, under 150,000 miles. Now, here I'm going into like no rust, because that, you know, that's the key.
I mean, yeah.
I think it's anywhere in the neighborhood of about 15 at the very lowest, and probably all the way up to about 25 if you could get one that had, you know, factory air conditioning, which one of the ones that I had did have.
Yeah.
And, you know, good condition. Some of these from the 86 and 87 have, or 84, 85, 86, and I believe 87 have these really cool 80s decals, which the red one I sold had.
Yeah. That
makes
awesome.
That's really cool. So I think the value is a little bit higher. The BJs are kind of all over the place, to be honest with you, because, again, the ones that have the VM engine, a lot of the Toyota purists, they don't want them.
Well, yeah, they poo-poo them. I mean,
well, which we've been through the VM engine in other episodes, and we know that that's a lot more bad rep that they got through Chrysler and Diesel than the reality of actually having one. So the VM engine ones, I think, are anywhere from about, this is in good condition, under 150,000 miles. I think the value is anywhere from about 14, and it could go all the way to about 18. And I've had a few of these, and I've had two that were under 100,000 miles, actually. And one had the first one, the one that you drove, that actually I had it resprayed.
Yep.
Because I bought it. And I sent my father to see it. It was a really rainy day, and he didn't realize that the paint was shit.
Yeah.
And so he went and he bought it. Then we went to pick it up. He was like, "Oh crap!
Yeah.
Is this the same car?" So he took it to the painter and had it painted. And then he told me afterwards, he's like, "Yeah, I took it to the painter because I didn't really see this when I made a stupid rookie mistake."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Ah, don't worry about it." So that one had a respray. So that one looked pretty good. So I'd say about 14, maybe 13.5, all the way up to like about 18.
Yeah.
So they're kind of in the same price range?
They are. I think Toyota will always have more, you know, value just because of the fact of the name is Toyota.
Yeah, and it's, you know, reliability and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. That carries a lot, so.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of where we're at. So if you're in the market for one, reach out. I find them. I find them every once in a while. Dan made me find his, and I'll tell you now, he didn't pay anything close to what the market value is.
Or what Haggerty insures is it for. So.
Anything close to that. and my daughter loved it, by the way.
She loves all your trucks.
She does. So reach out. But anyway, that's kind of where we're at. So, Dan, I don't want to go too long on this one. I know you're a diehard Land Rover guy, but I just want to know, could you see yourself in a Land Cruiser?
Nope.
No?
No. The only thing that I would, what are the, I think it's an 80, but you know, that sweet spot of 83 to 85 on the, you know, the bigger ones.
The FJ? The FJ 60 and 62?
Yeah. So like that I could probably toy around with for a couple weeks, but I bleed Land Rover. You know, I have a ton of them. It just, there's something about the design and the romance. And I know that kind of sounds cheesy, but there's something about the romance of the Land Rover for me over any sort of like Toyota product.
Well, you know what? If I had to choose between one of the two, and if I wanted a daily driver, I'd choose the Range Rover because that's my favorite. Mm-hmm. But if I had to choose between one of the two, I'd choose none. I'd buy a Series 2 and drive it.
Yeah.
Any version, any body style, I'd take the roof off and I'd use it in the summer and drive the hell out of it and enjoy it. But they are both very cool cars, the Disco and the Land Cruisers. Tell us what you prefer. Reach out to us, rovertalk55@gmail.com. Dan, we're going to have to cut this one. It's a pleasure once again.
Of course, always.
Being here with you. Let's see if we can get that Range Rover figured out. You know that I'm going to go home and sleep on why it's not starting, but hopefully by the time the next episode.
Knowing it's a Land Rover, I'll go out there tomorrow. It'll be a little warmer and it'll start.
And it might very well. That would just have to tackle the gold bugs. Anyway, thank you for listening to us. I want to shout out to a lot of different countries around the world. We're listened by 43 different countries around the world, all continents, especially our brothers in the UK and in Australia and in my dear beloved Malaysia, which I lived for a year. And of course, in Spain, where they're listening to us. So thank you for listening to us. We'll be back hopefully with another episode in the next week. And I'm not sure what we're going to do. We have a bunch of episodes. We just kind of order them the way they come. But anyway, Dan, thank you for being with me. And thank you everybody for listening.
All right. Bye-bye.